Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. This is Democracy Now!
Trillions, not billions! Trillions, not billions! Trillions, not billions!
Climate justice activists are outraged at how little money is being offered here at this finance COP by the most polluting nations to countries most severely affected by climate change. We'll speak to a spokesperson with Brazil's Climate Observatory and the head of PowerShift Africa.
There's no point accepting a deal if it's going to result in the deaths of the climate vulnerable communities on the front lines of climate change. There's no point in accepting a deal if Baku is going to be the burial ground of 1.5 degrees.
Then to the International Criminal Court's historic decision to issue arrest warrants for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. We'll talk to leading Palestinian human rights attorney Raji Sarani.
It's a great day to have these genociders finally with arrest warrant and wanted for justice at the most important court on earth.
Then to the so-called nonprofit killer bill that the U.S. House just passed. It could give the Trump administration sweeping power to revoke the tax-exempt status of any group, including media organizations.
It gives overreaching power to the administration, especially now the incoming Trump administration, to be able to shut down a nonprofit organization they may disagree with politically.
We'll look at Trump's new pick for Attorney General Pam Bondi. As Florida Attorney General, she dropped a probe into Trump University after Trump donated $25,000 to her campaign. All that and more coming up. To Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan's delegation to the COP29 United Nations Climate Summit has released the latest draft of a climate financing deal calling for the delivery of $1.3 trillion per year by 2035. But the text only calls on wealthier, more polluting countries to pay $250 billion per year to poorer nations bearing the brunt of the crisis. The group War on Want called the latest draft an insult, adding it's, quote, nowhere near the public grant-based climate finance the planet and people urgently need, unquote. Negotiations are expected to continue through the weekend. We'll have the latest from right here at COP29 after headlines. In Gaza, Israel's deadly attacks are continuing a day after the ICC issued historic arrest warrants for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. In North Gaza, the beleaguered Kamel Adwan Hospital warns it'll turn into a mass grave if no medical supplies are allowed in, as it remains besieged and under attack from Israeli forces. In Gaza City, rescuers searched the rubble today after at least 20 Palestinians, including children, were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a building housing displaced families.
This building has been hit three times, and every time people were massacred. Most of it was gone. Nobody was left. All of them are martyred today. A whole family lays here. A whole family has been wiped away. I swear to God, the whole family is wiped from the civil registry because of you, Israel. You kill civilians.
In southern Lebanon, an Israeli air attack has killed another two paramedics, adding to the more than 220 health workers who've been killed by Israel in Lebanon. Separately, an airstrike in Beirut's southern suburbs leveled at least one massive building earlier today. Meanwhile, in the Netherlands, a coalition of rights groups are suing the Dutch government for providing arms to Israel and failing to prevent genocide in Gaza. President-elect Trump has named his former impeachment lawyer, former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, as his new pick for Attorney General Thursday after Matt Gaetz withdrew from consideration. At least four Republican senators adamantly opposed Gaetz's confirmation amidst a firestorm over sexual misconduct and trafficking allegations. As Florida's top prosecutor, Pam Bondi led a failed campaign to overturn the Affordable Care Act and fought to uphold Florida's ban on same-sex marriage. She now works with the right-wing think tank America First Policy Institute. The news outlet The Lever reports Pam Bondi's brother, Brad Bondi, has represented Elon Musk and Tesla against federal securities fraud charges. We'll have more on the Trump nomination of Pam Bondi later in the broadcast. The U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday approved H.R. 9495, dubbed the nonprofit killer by civil society groups. The measure would give the incoming Trump administration broad authority to go after its critics by revoking the tax-exempt status of any group it labels a terrorist-supporting organization, with no evidence needed. The bill passed on a 219-184 vote, with 15 Democrats joining Republicans. H.R. 9495 has the support of the Anti-Defamation League and other Israel lobby groups. Critics warn the law would immediately target organizations fighting for Palestinian rights. The bill's fate in the Senate remains uncertain. We'll have more later in the broadcast. Brazil's federal police force has recommended criminal charges against far-right former President Jair Bolsonaro for attempting a coup as he attempted to cling to power in the wake of the 2022 presidential election. The recommended charges against Bolsonaro, along with 36 former aides and cabinet members, came as CNN Brazil reported Bolsonaro had full knowledge of a plot to assassinate then-President-elect Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Five people, including a former advisor to Bolsonaro, were arrested over the alleged conspiracy this week. On Thursday, President Lula spoke publicly about the plot for the first time.
I can assure you that I am a man who has much more to be thankful for because I am alive. The attempt to poison me and Vice President Ackman did not work, and we are still here.
The Kremlin has denied claims by Ukraine that Russia used an intercontinental ballistic missile in an attack on the central Ukrainian city of Dnipro. On Thursday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said the attack had instead used a new type of intermediate-range hypersonic ballistic missile carrying non-nuclear payloads. The Kremlin called the strike a warning to the United States and United Kingdom for allowing Ukraine to fire U.S. and British-made missiles at targets deep inside Russia. In Pakistan, at least 42 people were killed and more than a dozen critically injured Thursday when gunmen opened fire on a convoy of 200 vehicles traveling through a remote northwestern region near the Afghan border. Witnesses say about 10 assailants appeared to target Shia Muslims, first attacking a police escort before firing indiscriminately on buses and cars. It's the latest in a series of deadly sectarian clashes between majority Sunnis and minority Shias in Pakistan's Khyber Pakhtunkhwa region that have killed dozens of people in recent months. Back in the United States, federal prosecutors in Brooklyn have indicted India's wealthiest man, Gautam Adani, and several associates on multiple counts of fraud under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, a U.S. anti-bribery law. Prosecutors accuse Adani of leading a $250 million bribery scheme in India to obtain solar energy contracts worth billions of dollars, then covered up the graft to raise money from U.S. and international investors. Adani, who's listed as the world's 19th richest person with a net worth of more than $85 billion, is a close ally of the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who has repeatedly helped Adani Group win lucrative government contracts. Over 200 New Yorkers, including activists, union members, and elected leaders, gathered to call on New York Governor Kathy Hochul and the New York Power Authority to build 15 gigawatts of renewable energy. New York has proposed building just 3.5 gigawatts of renewable energy. This is Delorney Mamoran of South Bronx Unite.
2025 is coming, and the world is literally on fire. Brush fires everywhere. The Bronx has the highest brush fires in the past 2 weeks. And we have a Democratic governor and a Democratic majority in Albany. This is not the time to slow down on reforms. 15 gigawatts is possible.
New York City Assembly member and mayoral candidate Zoran Mamdani warned New York Governor Hochul is legally bound to fulfill New York's climate goals as laid out in the Build Public Renewables Act.
If you want to know how we can defeat the Donald Trump far-right movement, it's by showing that we actually have a workable alternative. Woo! Because if working-class people can't breathe the air, if they can't afford to live in the city they call home because they can't find a union job, and if they look around at their favorite parks being on fire, why would they trust us?
In Kansas City, Missouri, community members are calling for accountability after a 34-year-old mother, Maria Pike, and her 2-month-old daughter, Destiny Hope, were killed in an altercation with police where officers acknowledged they fired at least one shot. Their family members are demanding the release of body camera footage. And Palestinian-American poet Lina Khalaf Tufaha called on writers to use the power of words and their platforms to demand an end to genocide in Gaza as she accepted the National Book Award Wednesday for her poetry collection about Palestine called Something About Living.
I want us to feel and be uncomfortable and be disoriented and be angry and get up and demand that any administration, no matter what letter it has at the end of its name, D, R, whatever, that any administration that we pay for should stop funding and arming a genocide in Gaza.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I am Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. Today, Friday, is the final official day of COP29, but it's unclear if a final deal will be agreed upon by the deadline. Negotiations are expected to extend into the weekend. Climate justice activists are outraged at how little money is being offered here at this what's called the finance COP by the most polluting nations to the most severely affected by climate change. Azerbaijan's delegation to the COP29 United Nations Climate Summit has released the latest draft of a climate financing deal calling for the delivery of $1.3 trillion per year by 2035. But the text only calls on wealthier nations, more polluting countries, to pay $250 billion per year to poorer nations bearing the brunt of the crisis. The group War on Want called the latest draft an insult, adding it's, quote, nowhere near the public grant-based climate finance the planet and people urgently need, unquote. As the talks continue, we begin our coverage with climate justice activists and members of civil society who held a protest here calling for rich nations to pay up for climate finance. It was just before we went to broadcast. Democracy Now! Was there.
We are not demanding aid. We are not demanding charity. We are here to demand justice. And this justice comes through climate finance. How much do we want, comrades?
Trillions, not billions. Trillions, not billions.
My friends, the text that they are talking about is clearly lacking in the demands of the global south. And now, to tell us further about the intersection of the climate crisis and the effects of the ongoing war and genocide all over the world, let me call on our comrade Hanin.
Taking it for so long, hundreds of years. government, mixing war with private businesses, and you don't want us to give our money back. Give us our land back. Give us our share.
I call in now. Call in from OCI.
Hey, up. Hey, up.
Hey, up.
Of public finance. This is not charity. This is a debt, an obligation that the Global North owes to the Global South. It is a legal obligation, and we will not stop fighting until that obligation is met. We are demanding that this finance be public and high quality. This finance must be based on grants and grant-based equivalents, not on loans, not on things that further indebt the Global South and continue this dangerous, deadly cycle. This finance must be high quality. It must also not be from the private sector, because the private sector are the ones who have helped drive this climate crisis, who have helped get us into this mess. We cannot rely on the same corporations, on the same rapacious banks who have driven the climate crisis, who are driven by profit, not by human rights and by justice.
What we are asking for is not unreasonable. They pump money into the fossil fuel industry. We know where the money is. We know where financing lies. And now to discuss further, I call on our comrade Rimsha.
No more debt, no more loans, no more false solutions.
No more debt, no more loans, no more false solutions.
My dear friends, I come here from a country where there is a lockdown going on. It's not COVID anymore, but my children, my women, and my youth are having a lockdown because of the air pollution that is being caused. And who is financing these climate crises? It's all the Global North countries who are financing these. And we are still begging them for more loans to support our economic growth. They owe us. We don't owe them. They owe us.
They owe us. We don't owe them. They owe us. We don't owe them.
We've been told to keep it down. Woo! As if we aren't being piped down enough. Are we being loud?
No!
Are we being loud enough?
No!
Maybe we can give it one more chant, my comrades. Trillions, not billions. Trillions, not billions. Trillions, not billions. Trillions, not billions.
Trillions, not billions.
Just a few of the voices calling for rich nations to pay up for climate finance here at COP29. Yes, this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit here in Baku, Azerbaijan. This year expected to be the hottest year on record. Negotiations at COP29, known as the Finance COP, are also very heated. The COP29 presidency has released new text for the finance part of the deal that calls for a finance target of $1.3 trillion by 2035, but only calls for wealthier and more polluting countries to pay $250 billion per year to poorer nations who bear the brunt of the crisis but are least responsible for it. Oil Change International calls the text an absolute embarrassment, saying it's the equivalent of handing the keys to the fire truck to the arsonist. Talks to reach a final agreement appear likely to extend past today, the final official day of the summit. We're joined now by two guests, Mohamed Addo, founding director of PowerShift Africa, which he formed in 2018 to mobilize climate action in Africa and shift climate and energy policies to zero carbon. He's based in Nairobi, Kenya. And we're joined from Brazil by Claudio Angelo. He's head of international policy at the Climate Observatory Civil Society Network in Brazil, which is a member of Climate Action Network Latin America. He's usually based in Brasilia, but joins us now here in Baku. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! I mean, between you, you have almost 30 years of going to these COPs. Me and you, Mohamed, have been going since Copenhagen, and Claudio, you went even before that to Bali. Let's start with you, Mohamed. You have called this the worst COP ever. And for people to understand, COP stands for Conference of Parties. And you can explain why you think this is such a catastrophe here.
This is the worst COP in recent memory.
COPs are usually very delicate and requires a lot of diplomacy to get countries to agree to tackle climate change, reduce emissions. But the agenda for this year's COP is to mobilize climate finance so that we can help developing countries who have contributed the least to the climate problem to be able to contribute to the global effort to tackle climate change, both by way of emissions reductions, but also to help them adapt to the inevitable impact of climate change and deal with the residual adverse impact of climate change. The presidency, instead of allowing an eye-to-eye negotiations between the parties, has actually been covering for the rich world and not forcing them to put forward figures. So the developing countries have called for $1.3 trillion per year to help them deal with climate change. Developing countries have been doing this from day one. And up to today, we haven't had a number in a text. Before I come to the number, the rich world have actually done everything to avoid to put forward a number. On the other hand, developing countries have been calling them to engage them in good faith and in a negotiation that allows us to actually have a compromise and a successful deal. Now, instead of facilitating a negotiation between parties, the presidency has done everything to avoid that and has actually given an excellent cover to the rich world. Of course, the responsibility is on the rich world, and the rich world have shirked their responsibility to provide climate finance. On the text that you've just referenced, the rich world are now required to provide $250 billion per year, but from 2035. Let's understand what this means. This is a 30% reduction from the $100 billion that they promised the developing countries once you account for inflation. So what they promised the developing countries is $100 billion per year from 2020. So they made that promise 15 years ago and failed to honor it. Now they're making another promise 10 years down the line in 2035. So once you actually factor a very conservative 5% inflation, that is a 70% reduction to the $100 billion. And it's just 20% of what developing countries have asked for. And so it's actually a slap in the face of developing countries and doesn't get us to where we need to be.
And what does it mean? What would the money be used for? Why does this, at this point, still possible to avert total catastrophe if the developing world can adapt, can deal with climate change, and the most polluting countries in the world, the U.S. historically, the greatest greenhouse gas emitter, phases out fossil fuels?
So what we need to be able to tackle climate change effectively is massive reductions in emissions, and to also afford the vulnerable countries the opportunity to adapt to the inevitable impact of climate change and deal with loss and damage. Developing countries, out of an assessment that was done by the UN, have said they require at least $1.3 trillion per year to be able to contribute to the global effort to tackle climate change. What the rich world are now offering is just 20% of that, which effectively is a reduction of the promise they made 15 years ago. Now, if we're truly serious about emissions reductions, and if we're serious about providing solidarity to the vulnerable countries to be able to adapt, we should provide them the support that they require. There was a very objective, independent needs determination report, and that report said developing countries require $1.3 trillion to be able to do that. We wouldn't expect the developing countries to provide 20% of the ambition that is needed. So why can't we provide them the money to help them do it? This is a great swindle, and we must call that out.
Talk about how climate change affects your country, Kenya, your continent, Africa, Mohammed.
So the continent of Africa is home to 18% of the global population and contributes less than 4% of emissions on an annual basis. But if you are to account for emissions from 1850, when we started emitting, the continent of Africa has contributed less than 0.5% of the historic emission. This is a continent that is also most vulnerable to climate change because of our geographic location, but also because of our low adaptive capacity. We're ravaged by extreme weather events. We're now paying for, you know, the harms that have been caused by the historic emissions by the rich world. And instead of providing us support, what the rich world is doing is actually telling us to pay for those harms so that we can be able to pay out of our own national budgets without actually them paying for their liability. So you're vulnerable, you're least responsible, but you also have incredible potential to contribute to the global effort to tackle climate change. 60% of the renewable energy resources, especially solar, is in Africa. 40% of the critical minerals that are needed to help the world decarbonize are in Africa. But you know what? Africa attracts 2% of the total global renewable energy investment. So the continent, with 600 million people without electricity, a billion people without clean cooking, instead of the rich world providing them the support so that we can be able to develop in a climate-compatible manner, they are hoarding that and not sharing the resources, both by way of finance but also technology. Let's remember, we're in a climate negotiation. And climate justice has to guide us on how we respond to the climate crisis. Those with the broadest shoulders, who have emitted the bulk of the emissions and in the process accumulated a lot of wealth, in part by polluting without facing the cost of doing so, should shoulder the greatest burden.
Mohammed, you're following these very closely. What is the role of the United States?
So, United States is the biggest historic polluter. A third of the historic emissions have come from the U.S. And this is the wealthiest country that has the greatest financial and technological wherewithal. Instead of playing by the rule book, the U.S. is tearing it apart. They're not stepping up. They're not committing to sufficient emissions reductions. They're not providing finance. And using the excuse of Trump, the U.S., instead of helping the world arrive at a good deal, they're forcing the poor countries to accept a bad deal because of the fear of a Trump administration.
What do you mean, because of the fear of a Trump administration? What is? Well, John Podesta is the climate envoy. He followed John Kerry. What is the U.S. doing?
So, because of the threat of the Trump administration to pull out of the Paris Agreement, they want to force developing countries to actually compromise. They're holding developing countries hostage to accept a deal that is not good enough. And here we are, civil society, saying instead of accepting a bad deal, a no deal is actually better. It's better to actually work towards a deal that meets the requirements of the world. There's no point accepting a climate finance goal if it's not going to add up to help us get the job done.
So, Mohammed Adaw is from Kenya, and he's the director of PowerShift Africa. We're going to go to Brazil right now with Claudio Angelo. He's a former journalist, head of international policy at Climate Observatory, civil society network in Brazil, member of the Climate Action Network. Interestingly, next year, the COP30 will take place in Brazil, right on the edge of the rainforest. And you were just recently there in Benham. If you can talk about the state of these negotiations, because it's not done yet. I mean, we're sitting here on Friday late afternoon around 5 o'clock. Some say it might go till Monday, go till tomorrow. So the draft agreement can change based on how much people learn has been compromised, Claudio.
Yeah, this is likely drag way over time because the text as it is totally unacceptable right now. In fact, the text looks as if it was made on purpose for trolling purposes because it's obvious that no developing country could ever accept what is at the table right now. So it's likely that we will have a few more iterations of this text. And if we don't, or if the language doesn't change, this COP could end in a deadlock.
What is the position of President Lula of Brazil? I mean, we just interviewed the Colombian negotiator, Susana Mohammed. President Petro, interesting name for a climate summit, even though he's something like the sixth largest oil-producing nation in the world, is committing to phasing out fossil fuels. What about Lula?
Lula is pushing for massive expansion of fossil fuels in Brazil. One thing, however, is the situation within Brazil, and the other thing is the positions Brazilian diplomats are taking here, and they're actually being constructive. Brazil is willing to debate the implementation of the phase-out of fossil fuels provided for in the Dubai decision last year. Brazil even put that in the NDC, that it would welcome a debate for a calendar for phasing out of fossil fuels, as long, of course, rich countries go first. So we might expect to see some of that happening in Belém. We might even hope